We are Two Guys Gaming. As always, even though the music says, for now, Two Guys Gaming, this is One Guy Rating. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, noob of all trades from Two Generations Gaming, again, for now, soon to be slucas.me. And in this series, I am reading and reacting to Project Hail Mary, the novel by Andy Weir. This is going to be the final episode. I'm going to cover the last 11 chapters, chapters 20 through 30, in this episode, and then at some point next month, I will do the movie verses. I'm also going to try to catch up on some other ones and do the Jurassic Park movie verses, and maybe even a movie verses for Mortal Kombat, which I know isn't a book, but is a video game. I promised to get this series done by the end of April, and this is currently April 30th, so I am going to be able to keep that promise. Pretty cool. Let's see. Anything else I want to do for the intro? I guess we could talk about where we left off. Last time we left off on the huge cliffhanger of Rocky saving Grace because of the fuel tank rupture and the everything going sideways after the successful collection of the samples and everything. But fear not, faithful readers and listeners, we will get back into it and you can find out how everybody survives, because they do survive. Spoiler alert. As I've been doing, I will read the summary from supersummary.com. Not an endorsement, but if they want to sponsor me, I am open to a sponsorship. And then I will go through my initial thoughts, talk about the themes, maybe discuss the problematic side, quote unquote, wrap it up, and we will be done with the book and on to Legends and Lattes next month. All right, I think that's enough for the intro. Let's get into the summary. Chapter 20, summary. Afraid to turn on the spin drive before knowing the extent of the damage to the ship, Grace manually engages Hail Mary's centrifuge mode to stabilize gravity on board. Grace manages to haul a heavy and unconscious Rocky down to the dormitory from the control room, only to discover that the airlock to Rocky's compartment was destroyed by flying debris during the uncontrolled manual transition to centrifuge mode. The lab is also in total disarray. Grace manages to return Rocky to the compartment through the broken airlock, but is briefly exposed to Adrian's atmosphere, resulting in severe burns. The robotic medical arms intubate and sedate Grace. Grace comes to a few hours later, wearing an oxygen mask and with his left arm bandaged. Grateful to be alive, he decides he has to help Rocky. Exhausted and groggy from painkillers, Grace attempts to repair the ship, save Rocky, and examine the astrophage sample simultaneously. Grace sets up a clumsy observation tank for the Adrian astrophage sample, accidentally sealing it so there is no way to retrieve the sample. With more success, Grace reorients the crew cabin and surveys the damage to the spaceship. Grace finds and patches a small leak with epoxy and asks the computer for more painkillers, which impair his judgment. He dangerously drills into the dormitory airlock and rigs a pressurized pump inside of it to blow soot out of Rocky's radiator organ, hoping it will be enough to save him. Chapter 21 Summary. In flashback, Grace meets with Dubois, Ilyukna, and Yao to discuss their preferred ways to die after the Hail Mary mission is completed. Dubois requests nitrogen asphyxiation, as it is among the least painful ways to die, according to his research. Ilyukna requests death by heroin overdose, claiming she wants to experience quote-unquote massive pleasure before she dies. Yao requests a standard Chinese military-issue handgun and agrees to die last so he can safeguard Dubois and Ilyukna's death with the weapon. On the Hail Mary, Grace wakes up in the dormitory to Rocky tapping on the airlock wall. Rocky is graceful to Grace for saving his life, tells Grace that he almost killed him. What Grace blew out of Rocky's radiator was not soot, but a kind of scab that was part of his healing process. Still, Rocky will make a full recovery. Rocky chides Grace for accidentally stealing the sample and attempting risky products while sleep deprived and under the influence of painkillers. While Grace rests, Rocky makes a new container for the Adrian astrophage sample so that they can run experiments without exposing the sample to Earth's atmosphere. Again, Grace and Rocky hypothesize on the remarkable underlying similarities between their species, like the ability to hear, and their similar intelligence despite their obvious differences, attributing it mostly to evolutionary biology. Rocky notes that self-sacrifice is antithetical to the survival instinct, and that he and Grace are quote-unquote good people for risking their lives to save others. In flashback, Project Hail Mary has relocated to the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan. Grace meditates on the challenges his junior high students will face over the next 2 decades as the mission is underway. Suddenly, Grace's office window shatters, and he hears sirens in the distance. Strad arrives, and Grace learns that both Dubois and Shapiro have been killed by an astrophage explosion at the research center. Strad, unsympathetic to Grace's grief, demands a short list of new candidates for the mission's science specialist. On the Hail Mary, Grace and Rocky examine the Adrian astrophage sample and find an astrophage-eating amoeba. Rocky tells Grace to name the predator, and Grace chooses Taumeeba, a portmanteau of Tau City amoeba. Grace isolates the Taumeeba and begins to breed them. Grace and Rocky must determine how Taumeeba behave on Venus, where Earth's astrophage are breeding, and on Three World, which is Grace's name for the corresponding planet in Rocky's solar system, in which planets are unnamed. Grace coats a glass plate with astrophage, seeds the plate with Taumeeba, and then seals the plate inside a container simulating the Venusian atmosphere. He repeats this process for Three World. If the Taumeeba survive, then they will eat the astrophage and the glass plates will become clear. Rocky and Grace share a moment of optimism, hopeful that Venus and the Three World will be habitable for Taumeeba, and the solution has been found. Chapter 22 Summary. The Hail Mary is plunged into blackout, and Rocky helps Grace navigate through the dark to the control room, where they learn that the Hail Mary's primary and backup generators have failed. Grace activates the emergency batteries, but has a reduced power supply insufficient for controlling the ship or running the renewable life support system. There's enough air on the ship to sustain them for now, but they need to identify the problem quickly. With visibility limited, Rocky helps Grace locate the astrophage-powered generators in the storage compartment below the dormitory. The generator's fuel line is filled with foul-smelling, rotting astrophage, and Grace realizes that Taumeeba must have gotten into the Hail Mary's fuel lines and destroyed the astrophage, leaving them without fuel, stranded in space. Grace rests while Rocky cleans and repairs the generator and fuels it with his separate supply of astrophage, safe in his compartment on the ship. Grace suddenly realizes that the beetle probes are self-contained and may have enough astrophage fuel to propel the ship. Grace makes a dangerous spacewalk in gravity to retrieve the beetles as the Hail Mary is stuck in centrifuge mode and still spinning due to inertia. Rocky, although mystified by the electrical wiring of the beetles, modifies the probes so that they can be attached to the Hail Mary's hulls as thrusters. Grace makes another dangerous spacewalk to attach them. With the ship's electricity back to full power thanks to Rocky's generator repairs, Grace takes the Hail Mary out of centrifuge mode so they can turn on the hull-mounted beetles and stop the ship's spin. Grace is successful, and he and Rocky prepare to return to the blip bay using the beetle probes as substitute engines. Chapter 23 Summary. In a flashback, Grace attends a meeting with Strat, Yao, Ilyukina, and the other scientists where he learns that the accident that killed Dubois and Shapiro was caused by Dubois and Shapiro's testing of a highly unlikely malfunction scenario. By accident, Dubois was given nearly a million times the amount of astrophage he expected, but could not have recognized the difference between 1 milligram and 1 nanogram with the naked eye. The resulting explosion vaporized the research center. Strat informs Grace that he has been selected as the replacement science specialist for the Project Hail Mary, since the mission cannot be delayed. Grace has the coma-resistant DNA marker, and he is the leading expert on astrophage, and quote, has been present for every major scientific or strategic discussion, end quote. Grace, terrified of the suicide mission, refuses, although the only other available candidate is a distillery worker with a bachelor's degree in chemistry and no training for the mission. Strat gives Grace 4 hours to decide. Rocky designs reinforcements for the beetle probes so that the Hail Mary can travel at full thrust. Grace discovers that the Taumeeba experiments have failed. Taumeeba cannot survive in the atmospheres of Venus and Three World. Rocky tries to comfort Grace, who feels wrongly suited for the mission, now remembering that he was a last-minute substitute for Dubois and Shapiro. He consoles himself with the notion that he volunteered, which brings on another memory. In the recollection, Grace goes to Strat's trailer at the Baikonur Cosmodrome and refuses to be the Hail Mary science specialist on the grounds that he should stay on Earth to teach future generations to survive in the meantime. Strat sees through Grace's excuses and calls him a coward for hesitating to save billions of people, abandoning his academic career, and avoiding personal relationships. Grace admits that he doesn't want to die, and Strat tells Grace that he has no choice. Strat plans to imprison Grace until launch day, then drug him and have Yao and Ilyukina induce his coma while unconscious, under the pretenses that Grace has to be unconscious for takeoff. Strat plans to give Grace a dose of a French interrogation drug, cause total amnesia, but leave his skills intact. The crew will assume the amnesia is from the effects of the coma. By the time Grace remembers, it will be too late to hinder the project. Grace is horrified, but powerless to resist. Strat assures Grace that she thinks he is, quote-unquote, fundamentally a good man, and encourages him, quote-unquote, just think of the kids. Chapter 24, Summary. In the present, Grace is ashamed by the memory of his involuntary participation on the Hail Mary. Still, Grace is resolved to complete the mission. Grace rallies and makes a new plan to find out what the Venus and Three World atmospheres are deadly to Talmeba through trial and error, testing each element of the atmospheres one at a time. Impatient, Grace insists on a risky transition to centrifuge mode so he can begin experiments immediately. Rocky is more cautious but gives in, sensing Grace's heightened emotion. Grace quickly determines that Talmeba are killed by nitrogen, which makes up 3.5% of the Venusian atmosphere and 8% of Three Worlds atmosphere. Inspired by antibiotic-resistant diseases, Grace makes a plan to breed nitrogen-resistant Talmeba that can survive on Venus and Three World, and thereby manage the respective astrophage populations. Rocky builds 10 identical Talmeba tanks to begin breeding. Rocky and Grace are able to navigate back to the Blip A easily, thanks to Rocky's foresight to use preset engine flashes as a beacon. When Grace asks Rocky what the real name of the Blip A is, Rocky says Iridians don't name ships and remarks on the strangeness of the human custom of giving everything a name. Chapter 25, Summary. Rocky and Grace celebrate the successful breeding of Talmeba 35, which can survive the 3.5% nitrogen makeup of the Venusian atmosphere. Rocky designs a life support device for quote-unquote portable thinking machines, which is his term for the many laptops on the Hail Mary, and asks Grace to give him one to take back to Arid. Rocky has designed a camera to convert the light display of the laptop to a texture readout legible to Iridians. Grace promises to give Rocky a basic understanding of written language for Iridian scholars to work from, and asks for a gift of Xenonite and the materials that make it in return to take back to Earth. Grace sleeps easily, feeling close to success, yet is bothered by the possibility that everything could go wrong. Grace mucks out the Hail Mary's fuel tanks, which are still contaminated with Talmeba and dead astrophage. Once they've been sanitized, Rocky will refuel the Hail Mary with excess astrophage from the Blip A. Rocky offers to give Grace ammonia, which is a nitrogen compound from Blip A's artificial atmosphere, but Grace declines as Talmeba are only sensitive to pure nitrogen. Grace regrets that he will never see the inside of the Blip A, as a space suit could never withstand the intense heat and pressure of the Iridian environment. Two of the fuel tanks prove impossible to sanitize, and Grace jettisons them into space rather than risk spreading the Talmeba infestation. With only 6 of the original 9 fuel tanks, Grace doesn't have enough fuel storage to reach Earth before his food will run out, as the provisions on board were never intended to last for a return journey, much less a slower one. Even if Grace eats Yao's and Ilyukina's provisions and the food slurry that fed them while comatose, he will run out of food a year and a half too soon. Rocky's Iridian food is made up of heavy metals and inedible to humans. Rocky quickly devises a solution. Rocky will simply make replacement tanks and return the Hail Mary to maximum fuel storage. Grace installs Rocky's replacement tanks, made of an Iridian metallic alloy. Afterwards, Grace and Rocky discover that they have successfully bred Talmeba 82.5, which will survive the 8% nitrogen of Three Worlds atmosphere. Grace teaches Rocky to fist bump. Grace finds Ilyukina's vodka for a toast while Rocky dons a special Iridian celebration costume, and the two revel in their success, making plans to put Talmeba samples inside each beetle, just in case. Rocky and Grace say their goodbyes, sad that the differences between humans and Iridian lifespans make it unlikely that they will ever meet or communicate again, even with the possibility of interstellar travel. Rocky departs in the Blip A, and Grace sets course for Earth. Chapter 26, Summary. In flashback, Strat visits Grace in his cell at the Baikonur Cosmodrome. Strad explains that her background in history taught her that for thousands of years, until the Industrial Revolution, human culture revolved primarily around food. The famine and crop failure caused by the dimming sun will likely lead to global wars, which will exacerbate food shortages and lead to more death. Strad tells Grace she will sacrifice anything to ensure the Hail Mary's success, but felt she owed him her explanation. Grace tells Strat to go to hell, but she responds that, quote unquote, hell is coming to us. On the Hail Mary, Grace maintains the ship at the Taumiba Farms and debates staying awake or re-entering a coma for the long and lonely trip. Missing Rocky and remorseful about his lack of a social life on Earth, Grace occasionally turns his engines off and coasts so he can use the Petroviscope to track the Blip A. Grace attaches miniature Taumiba Farms to the Beetle probes so he can send them to Earth separately, just in case something should go wrong. The farms are made of iridian steel, not xenonite, so that the Earth scientists will be able to open them without damaging the Taumiba inside. Grace goes to fuel the beetles with extra astrophage, but discovers that Taumiba contaminated his astrophage storage bin. Chapter 27 Summary. Grace tries to remain calm in light of the Taumiba leak. He deduces that the Hail Mary's life support, cooling and heating system is the most likely source of the Taumiba breach, as it uses air to move astrophage across exposed coils. Grace disables the life support system and dons a spacesuit to open the airlock and flush all oxygen from the ship. He replaces the oxygen with 100% nitrogen, which he has plenty of thanks to Dubois' intended method of suicide. After several hours, Grace reactivates the life support system to flush the nitrogen and return the ship's atmosphere to normal Earth levels. He immediately sets work to isolating the Taumiba breeding farms and beetle probes in nitrogen-filled containers, not willing to take any chances of another outbreak that might imperil his fuel tanks. Chapter 28 Summary. Grace spends 3 days isolating and testing each fuel tank, which all pass the test for Taumiba infestation. Confident that all sources of Taumiba are contained, Grace turns next to the problem of identifying the source of the leak. Although Grace trusts Rocky's engineering implicitly, he runs a diagnostic test on the many Taumiba farms on each of the beetles just to be totally certain. When all tests come back clean, Grace sets up tests for the larger Taumiba breeding farms, then goes to sleep, noting that it now feels strange to not have someone watching him. When Grace wakes, he finds that the Taumiba breeding farms are in fact the source of the leak. Grace runs another experiment to figure out how the Taumiba farms could be leaking, but the Taumiba inside could be unaffected by nitrogen. How can the Taumiba be getting out of the xenonite tank if no nitrogen can enter the xenonite tank? Grace discovers that in the rush to breed nitrogen-resistant Taumiba inside the xenonite tanks, he has accidentally bred Taumiba that learned to burrow between the molecules of xenonite for safety. Nitrogen, since it is not alive, cannot replicate this maneuver, so Taumiba could escape it. Grace tests the Taumiba 82.5 just to be certain that they are nitrogen-resistant even without xenonite, and is relieved to confirm that they are. Grace can transfer the farms to metal containers and stop the leak, but he realizes that Rocky, whose entire ship and fuel tanks are made of xenonite, is in danger. Chapter 29 Summary. Grace can no longer find the Blip A with the Petroviscope, confirming his fears that a Taumiba outbreak has gotten out of the xenonite tanks on Rocky's ship and destroy the Blip A's fuel. Grace debates his options. Grace can launch the beetle probes, turn around to rescue Rocky from the Blip A, and take him to Arid. But without sufficient food, Grace will starve and be unable to return to Earth from Arid. Alternatively, Grace continue on Earth and return a hero, but Rocky and all the Iridians will die. Grace breaks down into sobs at the decision before him. Doesn't sound like much of a decision to me, but what are you going to say? Grace launches the beetle probes and searches for Rocky and the Blip A just outside the Tau Ceti system. Hindered by Rocky's inability to send a signal from the powerless Blip A, he uses the Petroviscope as a radar and searches for a reflection of the infrared light emissions. He locates what he thinks must be the Blip A and sets course, hoping that he isn't headed towards a random asteroid. Grace arrives at the Blip A and, hoping that Rocky has survived within, and knowing that Rocky will assume that no help is on the way, Grace spacewalks to knock on the Blip A's hull. Rocky is moved that Grace returned for him and reconnects the tunnel between their ships. Grace explains to Rocky how the Taumiba 82.5 evolved to be able to move through xenonite, and that he will take Rocky back to Arid in the Hail Mary. Grace admits that without enough food to return to Earth, he will die on Arid. Rocky suggests that Grace eat Taumiba, since it is an organic life form similar to single-celled organisms on Earth. Hopeful, they head for Arid. Chapter 30 summary. In the final chapter, styled Chapter V Script L, using the Iridian numerals for 30, Grace is established in his life on Arid. The Iridians, grateful for Grace's sacrifice to save their world, have built Grace an extensive habitat and developed vitamin shakes and lab-grown protein, which Grace calls quote-unquote me burgers, based on Grace's muscles to feed him. After 16 years in Iridian gravity, Grace is prematurely aged, although he estimates he's either 53 or 71 years old, depending on whether he uses relative time or Earth time. Grace meets Rocky, who has resumed life with his mate Adrian and maintained his friendship with Grace. Rocky tells Grace that Iridian scientists have determined that the star soul Earth Sun has returned to full brightness, indicating that the beetle probes were successful and Earth successfully fought the astrophage infestation with Talmeba. According to Iridian scientists, Earth scientists solved the Petrova problem within 1 year of receiving Talmeba and Grace's research. Rocky asks Grace if he will now stay on Arid or return to Earth. The Hail Mary is in orbit around Arid, fully fueled and ready for the journey if Grace wants to leave. And he would now have enough food to survive, although the trip would be long, lonely, and dangerous. Grace is noncommittal. Rocky tells Grace that he selfishly hopes that Grace will stay on Arid. Again, Rocky and Grace reflect on the surprising similarities between them and wonder what other life might be shared in their galaxy. Grace leaves Rocky to go to work, where he teaches science to young Iridians. Grace wonders briefly about what life has been like on Earth and how bad things got before the Beatles arrived, but he's comforted by the knowledge that humans would have needed to work together to send a probe with the Talmeba to Venus. Grace takes a seat at the musical organ-like keyboard he uses to quote-unquote speak Iridian and begins a lightning round-style quiz with his Iridian students. Okay, that's the end of the book. Pretty cool ending, if I say so. I never expected, honestly, that he would go back to Arid, although I think when I listened to it the first time, that's sort of what I was leading towards. And I just never thought that Andy Weir would go that direction. But I guess he wanted to be a little more fantastical with this one than he was with The Martian. Or I never read Artemis, but I heard that it's not great, so I'm no plan on reading it. But anyway, this whole arc here is the emotional whiplash from the celebration to the terror to the sacrifice to the realizing that Rocky is still alive, and Rocky and Grace's friendship survive into Arid and beyond. And being a teacher, I understand that that's what you do, you teach. So it was actually pretty cool that when Grace got to Arid, he became a teacher again and is teaching Iridians now. The whole memory reveal that he wasn't a hero who stepped up to save mankind, that he was actually a coward forced onto the ship, that kind of brought it home, because I've said at least once that I don't think I could be the one to do what he did. And it turns out that he really wasn't the kind of person who could do what he did. He just happened to be forced to by Strat. He does eventually, obviously, just like Strat said, he came around and he became the hero of both Earth, and he sacrifices himself and his ability to go home in order to save Rocky and bring him back to Arid to save the Iridians as well. I said it didn't feel like much of a choice, and I stand by that. Like, he could have been selfish and gone home. But, I mean, at least me being the kind of person that I am, it's like, well, you send the Beatles there, they can save Earth, which happened, and then you can go and you can save Arid, and everybody's happy, except you don't get to go back to your planet. But there wasn't really much waiting for him back there anyway, so I don't know what he was expecting. But anyway, the ending is pretty cool. As I said, you know, it's after all the craziness, you kind of settle in and you realize that, you know, he's just an old guy hanging out with his buddy on his new world, his new home world, and then he goes off and does his job as a teacher to teach all the crazy kids on Arid. Just overall, this is exactly the hopeful type of book and movie that I needed when The Burning God started to get me down too much. And I'm also glad to be going to Legends and Lattes next, because I do need a little bit more of that pick me up. I will wrap up The Burning God with just like one final episode, just kind of talking about it and why I can't finish reading it at this point. But I'm gonna jump right into Legends and Lattes and then pick that up at some point. Okay, now on to the themes. The big one this time around, obviously, is the sacrifice. We have Grace's arc that I talked about. He's a coward who doesn't want to die. I mean, who does? But he, like, really sort of drives that home that he's like, no, I gotta stay here for the kids. I gotta stay here for blah, blah, blah. And you know, it's just because he's too chicken shit to actually make the choice. And I guess he shows that even when he goes to, or when he needs to decide between quote unquote, helping Earth and helping Rocky. It's more that, you know, if he had been the person that he was, he may have just said, well, there's not much I can do at this point. I got to go back. I got to save my people, yada, yada, yada. And then, you know, Rocky's probably fine, I'm sure. You know, he could just put it completely out of his mind that anything bad would have happened, and he could have just gone home and had a more or less clean conscience. So, as that coward, he gets forced into the sacrifice by Strat initially, by, you know, by just being thrown into the mission and jailed so that he can't run or harm himself in any way to try to mess up the mission. I mean, he's mad at Strat, tells her to go to hell, which I thought was kind of a, I mean, I guess I understand the reaction on some level, but it's also, it just seems like it's, again, petty and silly, and the guy just needs to grow up and realize that, hey, you're the one. You need to be the one. So do it. And then he finally makes that sort of completion of that arc by realizing that he can go and help Rocky while he sends the Beatles back to help Earth. Those line up pretty neatly. As parallel choices. Initially, he refused the mission. Like, he just flat out refuses. He's like, no, I'm not going. I don't want to go. I can't go. I need to be here. I need to teach people how to get along and how to survive what's coming. And I have to say that I actually understand that side of things that he puts forth, because that's the kind of thing that I even think of now. As a teacher in this rural district where there's not a lot for the people who stay in this town, and yet people still stay in the town. So, how do you teach them up to make the town into something better, make the town into something that can work, that can grow, that can build, that can just, it's not obviously as crucial as murdering each other for food, which is what Strat says could happen, but it's still fairly dismal and fairly dark, and there are times when I just say to myself, what am I even doing here? Why don't we move and get out and start over somewhere else where it's easier? I think it goes back to, if you think about Grace and who he actually is versus who he prevents himself when he's frightened later on, he's finally made that connection with someone, with Rocky. And then he understands what that sacrifice actually means to put yourself in danger for somebody else. Because, as Strat said, he never had that on Earth. That's one of the reasons that he wasn't willing to put himself out there, is that it's like if he had a wife, if he had some kids of his own, not his students, who, no matter what you say, they're still, it's just a superficial connection between teacher and student. Like, you only see them for an hour a day. I say this all the time. I only see students for an hour a day. There's only so much that I can do in that hour, and it's not going to undo the 23 hours that I don't see them. So that connection, no matter how strong it feels, is still superficial, and it's still very on the surface. And I honestly, if I didn't have a wife and kids, and you asked me to risk myself for the sake of my students, I would probably tell you no. I'm not gonna do it. I mean, I know you'd be putting yourself out there for the entire world, but like if you say it's for the students, I'm gonna be like, yeah, I don't know if I could do that, honestly. So he saves Rocky because he knows that it's quote unquote right he realizes that if he doesn't, then something very terribly could have gone wrong and the entire world of Erid could die. And again, I go back to what decision did he really have to make? He could have gone back to Earth. He could have gone back home, but he went back and he saved Rocky. Now, he knew that he would die on Erid. He's going to die on Erid because he can't go back to Earth, or I guess he could go back to Earth. He didn't know this when they figure out a way to make the meat for him to sustain himself, but he knows that he's going to die, so it becomes again that sort of closing of initially he didn't want to die for Earth, but then he realizes that there's this deep connection that he has with Rocky and he's willing to die. And I mean, this is not even considering, none of this is even considering the sacrifice that Rocky made by jumping into Earth's air to save Grace at the end of the previous section. Big part of this, which I talked about a lot, I talked about Rocky as a friend. Rocky said that Grace is a friend, and the last time friendship is a huge part of this part of the book, this section of the book. And when you finally get to that goodbye scene, you've had these two guys, well, this guy and this Iridian, going back and forth for so long and making sacrifices for each other and helping each other out, that when they finally get to that goodbye scene, if you're like me and you're like, okay, this is the falling action, what more could possibly happen? They just go on their separate ways. Weir tells the story of Grace going back and saving Earth, and Rocky going back and saving Erid, and everything is hunky-dory. So you think that they're both leaving one another, and it's like, how do you explain it? I mean, he has them on video, I would think, but like, how do you explain it to somebody else? You're the only person who's ever met another alien so far, and it's just like, how do you explain that connection? The friendship that becomes the motivator for everything that the two do for each other, which I think is a really cool way to frame it. Again, it could have just as easily been that they were adversaries, not necessarily adversaries, but just like they didn't get along, but they were forced to work together type thing, or that and that would have changed the entire story. Of course, they'd still have to work together, but you wouldn't have that emotional connection or the sort of core of the story that forces, not forces, but Grace forces himself to go back for Rocky. And then we come back full circle. You know, there's been a couple of the scenes where one knocks to let the other know that they're okay or they're there or what have you. And that's where we get the knock from Grace to the Blip A to let Rocky know that he's there and he's come to save him. Weir spends a surprisingly, I thought, long time talking about food and survival, especially with Strat's monologue saying that human history is mostly about food up to a certain point. Famine leads to war, and in some cases, famine is the result of war, right? They use famine to wear down their quote-unquote enemies. I mean, they still do that kind of stuff if you look at what's happening over between Israel and Gaza and even Russia and Ukraine, is that they cut off food supplies to make the people more desperate and weaker or whatever they're trying to do. So it's just the food is, I mean, it's obviously a necessity for human life, and the fact that we still fight over it, even though you hear all the time that we have enough food that everybody could eat and there would still be food out there. And plus, like, the thing that I keep going back to is that we've had a garden for the last, I don't know how many years, 10 years, and like you can literally grow food almost anywhere. I mean, we're kind of lucky because of where we live. We live in the Northeast, and you know, we have the climate for growing food for the most part. But even without that, you can create an environment in which you can grow food. So, like, when people say that things are finite, like food is finite, yeah, it's finite to a certain point, but like you eat a tomato, you dry out the seeds, you bury the seeds, water them, and you got more tomatoes. So like I don't understand a lot of stuff that people do, and that's a big one. But then food comes up again, that more immediate that Grace will not have enough food to reach Earth, especially after he goes back and saves Rocky. They talk about him eating Talmeba, which, I mean, you can eat amoeba, so that's kind of interesting. I thought the whole meat burgers scene, that was kind of funny when I first heard about it, and then I had forgotten about the meat burgers thing until I listened to the book again, and I that was it's as you can hear, I just think it's funny. Meat burgers is a funny phrase, and also the fact that he's eating food that's made from his own cells is an interesting kind of side story that you could spend a lot of time on if you really wanted to. I'm not going to, but maybe when we talk about the movie, I'll go a little bit more into the meat burgers. So initially, the amnesia of the flashbacks is all about him learning things about himself and about what he's there to do. And then at the end of the story, now you get the amnesia as the you weren't the person, you're not the person that you think you are. Now you have to deal with that you were the guy who was willing to potentially sacrifice all life on Earth for yourself. Like, you were that selfish. You had to be forced onto the ship, literally, physically forced onto this ship, given amnesia, and the hope that you would wake up to the fact that what you're doing is more important than yourself. And he does come to that conclusion finally, and what he does on the ship makes up for the fact that he was such a coward initially. The fact that you can be a coward and then still end up as the hero, that is not always, I think, talked about much in these kinds of stories where the hero is either born to be a hero or they grow into it, but they're never actually like cowardly. They're always the one who's like, yeah, I want to be the hero. I want to save the girl. I want to slay the dragon. But it's not about that necessarily. In this case, where he becomes the hero in spite of the fact that he was, again, willing to just blow it all up because of his fragile little ego or whatever you want to say. So last time I talked about some of the problematic, quote unquote, things that I had seen about the book. I did want to follow up on those and kind of wrap those up a little bit. I mean, it's obviously not going to please everybody what I'm going to say in response to this, but it's at least good, I think, to have these types of conversations because, again, you can enjoy something and also realize that there are some things maybe there that could be improved or could be adjusted to make them a little bit less, quote unquote, problematic. I have been watching Invincible with my kids, and watching Invincible, and knowing what I know about Robert Kirkman as a writer and sort of some of the things that he's said in the past, where he's left to his own devices, sometimes things get a little out of control. But when he's in a writer's room, he said this about The Walking Dead, that when he's in a writer's room and people are there to say, no, I don't think we should do that, maybe we should do it this way, it seems to make things better overall. I know people will complain because they wokeified the show or whatever, because everybody in the book, as Kirkman has said a couple of times, is white because that's what he knows. But then when you get into a more varied writer's room, they're like, oh, well, we can make this character Asian and maybe make this character black, and it makes things a little bit different. Again, that can bring up some other problematic things that people talk about, but at least we're having these conversations now, and I think that it's good that we are, at least for the most part, able to have these conversations and settle some of these scores, so to speak, without too much harm to one another. The problematic sides are Strat. I mean, Strat is just out of control for the most part. You know, after what she does to the Earth, she does more or less the same thing to Grace. She drugs him, induces his coma without consent, erases his memory. I mean, it never gets fully condemned necessarily. Like, he just kind of comes to the conclusion that it was his fault. So, I mean, I don't want to get too deep into it, but it feels like there's some survivor's guilt there a little bit. It's framed as necessary, but isn't that what people always say when they force a person to do something? That it's like, this is necessary for whatever. And yes, I understand. I mean, if the guy's going to run, then you have to make uncomfortable decisions. But also, I don't feel that it was ever like fully sort of wrapped up. And I guess, that's the way things are sometimes. Does it make it any more comfortable for me? Not really. It's still kind of icky. And if I think about it for too long, it might just start to unwind the narrative for me a little bit. So the fact that he's a reluctant hero, that he has to be quote unquote tricked into saving the world, does that like make him less of a hero? It definitely makes the story more interesting because what you thought you knew about this guy gets completely upended at the end there, and then he has to reconcile with it as you're reconciling with it and just kind of saying, oh, well, holy cow, like this guy is just like me. Like these are the kind of decisions that I would make if I were in this situation. Like I said before, I don't think I could do the things that he did, but then when you hear about him being reluctant as well, to the point that he had to be tricked into being a hero, then what are you gonna do, right? I don't think it makes him any less of a hero necessarily. It definitely makes it a more interesting story, and it makes you again reckon with the thing as it happens. I mean, I talked about the great man thing last time. I'm not gonna harp too much on it about it this time. It's kind of weird, but it also makes sense because, when you hear somebody like Kirkman say, well, I write white people because I'm a white person, and when Weir tried to write the people of the United Nations or whatever, it kind of got a little weird there. So I guess it's good that he wrote a white guy. It's kind of as it were, but I have heard people say, oh, this cool white guy science teacher, blah, 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 problematic insert. And yeah, I understand that, and I recognize it, and I would probably be more upset if it didn't mirror my own reality so much, but I don't sweat it too terribly much. I mean, Strat doesn't necessarily get off easy. He tells her to go to hell. She says, "Yeah, well, hell's coming for us," which I think is kind of a flip response to what he says. Like she's not really reckoning with it necessarily, but she does recognize at least that her actions are sort of on in that gray area that people don't like to exist in a lot of the time. Like I say, grace is cowardice. It's human. It's what we might do in the same situation, so it makes him more relatable, I suppose, to us. And he has to actually show that he's not that person anymore, and that he's learned from his quote unquote mistake. And even though it's just Grace who's left at the end, this white guy, Rocky does become a full partner to him, not necessarily a sidekick. So while all of this problematic stuff doesn't ruin the book for me, I just kept thinking, how would the story look if Grace had volunteered from the start? Like, what if he was the heroic dude who just like, yeah, that's fine, I'll do this. How does it change his quote unquote redemption? Does he even go through the redemption? What if the crew had been more diverse and survived? Like, what if they had the different crew working together? And there's bound to be disagreements and stuff like that. That might have made it more interesting. I mean, these questions are worth asking, and they're worth at least talking about. And again, if I had more time, I might be able to say more about it. For now, that's the end of Project Hail Mary, the book. I enjoy the book, like I say, even though I can recognize that there are some elements that could be considered problematic. It didn't ultimately ruin the book for me. It just makes me ask some questions. It's so satisfying. I laughed. I cried. I cheered a couple of times. And I went to see the movie as soon as I could because I needed that in my life at the time. Because things right now are heavy overall, and reading The Burning God, it just kind of beat me down even more. And then I watched The Grave of the Fireflies, and there was so much happening, and I'm glad that this book was able to lift me a little bit. Like I said, I'm going to do Legends and Lattes. I started listening to that. It's very, very surface level, very silly almost. And I'm sure it's going to get deeper. People love the book. That doesn't always necessarily mean that it's a great book, but it definitely hits that same spot that this one does, even if it seems even more surface level and less deep than Project Hail Mary right now. But what are you gonna do? It's what I need in my life right now, and so far I'm enjoying it. So, as always, thanks for listening. You can find us, if you haven't already, at www.twoguysgaming.net, soon to be slucas.me. We have articles. I did some silly articles for Mario. You'll have to check them out on the website to see what I mean. I did the deep dive for the Fallout TV show. I want to do some more articles, or I've been thinking about doing more articles, but I'm also focusing more on the audio and video side of things. Speaking of the video, I've uploaded a couple more to YouTube. NoobDad131 is my handle there. I've also been uploading to TikTok. I have this 10-second video about my server that I built in Minecraft that has gotten over 5,000 views and something like 30 comments and a bunch of likes. So who knows what's going to hit and when it's going to hit. You can find me there, NoobDad76. I will be back soon. I have tomorrow on the schedule for the first part of Legends and Lattes. We'll see if that actually happens. I still have a few chapters to listen to, and then I have to write my notes and record all of that. I will be back soon-ish with that. I will talk to you then. Bye, guys.
We are Two Guys Gaming.